Welcome to the Culture of Things podcast with Brendan Rogers. This is a podcast where we talk all things culture, leadership and teamwork across business and sport.
To all our loyal listeners, the Culture of Things podcast will now have specific episodes produced for YouTube. To ensure you don't miss out on this exclusive YouTube content, head over to YouTube, click on the subscribe button, and hit the notification bell. Now, let's get into the episode.
Hello and welcome to the Culture Things podcast. I'm your host, Brendan Rogers, and this is episode 65. And the chap I'm lucky enough to speak to today is a guy called Mark Birigiddi. Mark, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Very well, mate. Very well, mate. Thanks for coming on to the Culture of Things podcast. I'm going to read some of your biography. So those that may not know who you are, we'll learn a bit about you, then we'll dive into our topic. How's that sound?
Sounds good, mate. Sounds
awesome, good. Mate. So Mark is a professional footballer who plays goalkeeper for A-League side, the Central Coast Mariners. His professional football career started in 2008 with Adelaide United, where he debuted against my team, the Brisbane Roar, helping Adelaide to a 1-0 win. Mark moved to the Newcastle Jets in 2012, where he quickly became the first choice goalkeeper. During his time in Newcastle, he also had a loan spell in Italy with Serie B side Varese. He joined Premier League side Swansea in 2016, then moved to Holland in 2017-18 before returning to Australia in 2018 after signing a deal with Melbourne City. He then joined the Mariners in 2019 and in his debut season won the Mariners medal. Mark has represented Australia at under 17, 20 and 23 levels and has also been capped for the Socceroos. When he's not playing football, you can spot him most mornings working on his tan on Terrigal Esplanade whilst eating smash avocado. Today, we're focused on understanding the mindset of a goalkeeper. Birras, welcome to the Culture Things podcast.
Thank you. I don't know about the smashed avocado, but yeah. Definitely working on my tan in the morning.
So you don't want to expand on the smashed avocado, because I'm pretty sure one of your goalkeeping mates sort of dogged you in a video a while back.
Yeah, look, I do love a smashed avo, but I haven't had one for a while. Obviously, you know, with COVID and whatnot, you know, sitting and dining in restaurants has been difficult. So yeah, haven't had one for a while, but yeah, now my wife's fully vaccinated, we can. We can enjoy the perks of eating in at a restaurant and having a nice breakfast down in Terrigal.
Absolutely, mate. And have you got babysitters on hand? Because you've got young Luca, who's only a young fella, 2 or 3, and then you've got Sienna, who's only a few weeks old, mate.
Yeah, so obviously, you know, it is challenging, but, you know, we're riding solo, me and my wife. Obviously, my family are all back in Perth and my wife's family are all over in the UK, so... It is only us here, but we're very lucky. We've got a close network of very good friends that, you know, that are always around and, you know, willing to give us a helping hand when needed.
And you're a bit of a cook too, I hear. Is that right?
I'll give it a crack. I'll try my best.
What's your specialty?
I'll cook a good spag bol, being Italian background. Yeah, I do cook a good pasta, but yeah, my specialty is pasta. Yeah, definitely.
That's awesome, mate. You might have to give me some tips, because I sent a note to my wife when we had to sort of delay the start time for our recording, and the only thing she came back to me is said, make sure you cook the dinner, because Monday night's spag night and that's what I cook. It's all I can cook, really.
I can look after you, don't worry.
Awesome, mate. I look forward to getting some tips. Mate, let's get into our topic. So this bit of a psyche and understanding the mentality of goalkeepers, mate, because you're a different breed, aren't you? What does that mean when people say goalkeepers are a different breed?
Every person I speak to, as you just said, you know, goalkeepers are a special breed. And, you know, we definitely are. You know, we're the last line of defense. You know, we see everything that goes on in front of us. You know, we put every part of our body on the line, whether it might be your face, your arms, your legs, anything to stop the ball from going in the back of the net. You know, that's my job. Yeah, it's just the mentality of a goalkeeper. You know, it's something that was embedded in me early on in my career through my father, who was a goalkeeper. He didn't play at the highest of levels, just played locally in Perth. And yeah, it was just grained into me. And yeah, the rest is history.
Where does that courage come from, mate? I've spoken to people on the podcast before who think courage is something that you just can't train. It's just innate in you. So where does that come from for you, do you think?
It is. I think it's ingrained in you from a young age. You know, you need that mongrel. You know, being a goalkeeper, it's only you out there. You've got no one to protect you. Strikers can get away with making mistakes. Midfielders can get away with making mistakes. Defenders can get away with making mistakes. But for a goalkeeper, there's no one there to help you. You make a mistake, you make a bad mistake, and it can cost the team and it can cost you as well. But it's a problem that I like to have. It's a pressure that I love having going into every game, and I just enjoy it. It's a courageous position. You need balls of steel. You know, you're going to have a lot of downs. You know, you're going to make mistakes. You know, you see mistakes at the highest level. You know, you see goalkeepers in the Premier League all over the world making mistakes. But the important thing is how you recover from these mistakes. You know, you learn from them quickly, you work on it, you put it aside and you focus on the next game. You know, you can't dwell on it. Because the worst thing for a goalkeeper is you make a mistake in a game, it's important how you react, that next action. And if that next action is good, the mistake is not forgotten about, but it will set you up for a good game. So over the years, you learn and you pick up things. And you know, I was one early on in my career where I made a mistake and I dwell on that and it'd affect my whole game. Whereas now, you know, being more experienced, being a leader in the team, I've played at the highest level, I've been overseas, you know how to react and you know how to adapt to these kind of things. And I think it's the more games you play at the high level, the more experience you're going to get and you'll know how to overcome these tough situations in the future.
Mate, tell us a little bit more on what you do to develop that strength of mindset. You know, you referred to being a young keeper and maybe you dwelled on things in the past, but what have you done through your career to just help you get stronger in the mind?
Well, first things, I surround myself with very, very, very good people, people that have an understanding and are there for me and are there for what I want to achieve in the long term. There are a lot of pretenders out there that think that they have your best interest, but they don't. You know, they want to see you fail. But not only in sport, you know, it's in business, it's in anything. So I have a close network of people. I have my family, I have my wife, I have my agent who was an ex-footballer who played at the very highest level in Europe. So I support myself, I surround myself with these kind of people that have been in this position and I just feed off them, like information that they give me. You know, I ask them questions, you know, how do you cope, you know, in a certain scenario? How do you recover from mistakes? How do you move on from it? And I have that close group and no one from the outside can get into that close circle that I have. You know, like I said, they're family, they're close friends, and they're just there to give me the best advice possible to have a long and good career.
I want to give the listeners a bit of a perspective on the sort of, some would say definitely courage, some would just say absolutely crazy. But 2015, take us back to that moment where you got smacked in the face. What was the injury? And you were back training pretty quickly from what I understand.
Look, to be completely honest with you, that probably wasn't the worst injury that I had. You know, it probably looked worse on social media. You know, you're reading articles, but
like losing four teeth didn't look too pretty, I have to say.
6-7 years ago was probably the worst. I had a really bad injury. I was at Newcastle at the time. It was a similar scenario. A ball got played in behind the defence and I've come off my line, which I'm, you know, very, very good at. And a striker tried to jump over me. And I made the save, tried to jump over me. As he was about to jump over me, he followed through with his knee and caught me on the cheekbone. Anyway, I was knocked out. I was on the ground in no man's land, didn't know where I was, got taken to John Hunter Hospital, had x-rays. And it was a pretty, pretty bad, bad injury. So I fractured my cheekbone, fractured my eye socket, fractured my jaw. It was a really, really, really nasty injury. I remember that night I was in the hospital lying on my bed and I was sleeping and I woke up early hours of the morning. It would have been about 1:30, 2 o'clock. I remember just waking up and my mum was by the bed with my brother-in-law and I thought I was dreaming. I was on heavy medications. And I see my mum and I'm like, Mum, what are you doing here? She goes, yeah. She goes, I was watching the game on TV and I knew it was a bad injury. The camera zoomed in on your face. You know, you had a big hole like in your face. I'm like, well, how'd you get here so quick? She goes, yeah, I called up Qantas straight away. I'm like, you need to get me on a flight straight away to Sydney. My son's had an accident. So my mum flew over with my brother-in-law. Anyway, went and seen the surgeon the next day, and he goes, pulled up all the x-rays on the monitor and whatnot, and he goes, look, Mark, he goes, this is a very easy procedure. He goes, you have two options. Option number one is we cut around your hairline, pull your face forward, and we do the operation like that, or we give you 8 incisions and, we'll go in and we'll fix it up and all medical terms that I don't even know about. But the option one, when he mentioned option one, my mum actually fainted in the doctor's room. She's like, oh, my God, and just, like, fainted and went backwards on her chair. And anyway, so had the operation. Everything went according to plan. The rehab started happening. And the surgeon and the doctors were saying, look, Mark, you're going to be out of action for 16 weeks, which is a long, long, long time. And me and the way I am, that was eating inside. I just wanted to hurry up and get back on the field, do what I love doing. And that's playing football. So anyway, I started the process of rehab. It was 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And then in the fourth week, we're playing Sydney FC at home. And this was on a Friday. So I was back full training with the team by then. No contact, but training with the team. And, it was a Friday. We're playing on Saturday. And I go into the dressing room after training on the Friday and I see my name on the whiteboard that I was in the squad. So anyway, I'm like, oh, you know, this can't be right. Like, they've made a mistake here. You know, I'm out for 16 weeks. You know, this is only the fourth week. So anyway, goalkeeper coach come in. I pulled the goalkeeper coach in the dressing room. I was like, Bobby Margo, what's happening? I'm in the squad. Like, don't you know, I'm meant to be out for 16 weeks? And he goes, oh, like, shit. I don't know what's happening. I don't know what's going on. He goes, oh, come with me. We'll go and speak with the coach. So I went into the gaffer's room, the coach's office. And I'm like, Gaffer, I go, mate, what's happening? He goes, how are you feeling? I said, Gaffer, I feel fine. Like, I feel fine, but I can't play for 16 weeks. Like, in case I come out and I get another knock, like, you know, you're talking like serious stuff here. He goes, Mark, be honest with me. Can you play tomorrow? Yes or no? And I didn't know what to say. I was like, yeah, like being young at the time, I was like, yeah, yeah, I'll play. So I played the game on the Saturday after 4 weeks. And I caught the... actually played the game and I copped the hit in the game. I copped an elbow to the side of the face. And because obviously I was a bit wary going into the game, you know, all the clubs, all the players around the league knew what had happened. So they were going to test me. You know, I remember it was a corner. The whole team came and crowded me. They put a ball in the box and I had players swinging elbows and I actually got hit with an elbow, but I was fine. I recovered well. And then my mindset was like, okay, I'm fully healed. Like, I can cope with it. I'm ready to go. And then that just gave me confidence through that whole game and through the rest of the season. It was nuts, though. It was nuts. It was pretty crazy.
It's an amazing story. I didn't know about that one, but
yeah.
The thing that's jumping out of my head is like player welfare. I mean, 4 weeks. On reflection, how does that sit with you? In that, you know, we love the game of football and obviously it's your job and all that sort of stuff. But on reflection, where does it sit?
Look, obviously, you know, from a club's point of view, it was a silly thing. Player welfare is so important. Normally in these kind of scenarios, you have to get ticked off by the doctor that I'm all good to go. But for some reason, it didn't happen. But back then I was young. I just loved playing football. I missed the game. You know, I was in the stands watching, you know, the weeks that I was out, I was in the stand and it was just eating inside of me. I'm like, I need to get back. Like, I need to come and help the team, you know, and we went on a run where I was out of the team. You know, we lost, I think, 3 games. You know, I could see the team was missing me. They wanted me back. You know, I'd go into training. They're like, Mark, when are you back? You know, we need you, blah, 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 blah. So it was all that pressure. And, you know, it was just the inexperience of me at the time. You know, 18, 19 years of age. I just wanted to play. I wanted to get out there and I wanted to help the team, you know, because the team needed me. And, you know, like I said, it's just my mentality where across that white line, no matter what I've been through, no matter what's happened to me, you know, I just want to play and do what I love doing, and that's, you know, kicking the ball around with a bunch of mates.
I wasn't clear on what option did you take, option one or option two?
Definitely option two.
Option.
Definitely option two. Option two all the way.
I'm thinking, you know, you're a good-looking young man. I'm thinking you must have done option one and they must have done a bit of plastic surgery.
So the missing teeth one, which happened a couple of years ago, you know, that was just a couple of missing teeth and that was it. You know, it wasn't as bad. So like I said, it looked bad on, you know, articles on the news and social media, but it wasn't that bad, just missing 6 teeth.
Does Carly come to your games?
She tries to. She tries to come to the earlier ones when we kick off at like 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. You know, they're the better ones, obviously, with children and sleep and stuff like that. You know, it is difficult. But, yeah, she tries to come to most of the games. And, you know, looking at the fixtures for this season, you know, we've got a lot of early kickoffs, which is good. So it would be nice to have Luca and see her there at the games.
Absolutely. How's her heart rate knowing that, you know, you are putting your body on the line, as you've referred to, and a couple of those injuries. Where's her heart rate sitting during the game?
Yeah, look, I'm a passionate person. You know, I reckon my heart rate throughout the whole game is above 180.
No, I'm not caring about your heart rate. I'm caring about Carly's heart rate.
Oh, Carly's heart rate.
No, she's all right. She's putting herself into battle.
Look, to be fair, I have to give it to her. She's pretty chilled. Obviously, touch wood, she hasn't experienced me getting injured since I've been with her. But I think my parents back in Perth who watch every game, I think get stressed more than what Carly does. But, you know, Carly, full credit to her, she's pretty chilled. I don't think she gets to watch much of the games, to be honest. You know, she's in the box, you know, playing with the kids and minding the kids, and, you know, Luca's running around up in the box. And so she doesn't get to watch much of the game. So I hear about it in the car after the game. I'm like, babe, I go, what did you think of the game? Well, I don't know. I didn't get to watch any of the game. I was chasing Luca around the whole time. Sometimes she doesn't even know what the score was.
yeah, sort of the way it works, isn't it? There's a lot of work involved in looking after little Luca, I suppose.
It is. Little terror, but it's good. Keeps me on my toes.
Absolutely. Mate, you mentioned a number of times that you just love football. Like, where did that come from? Where's your love of football growing from?
Yeah, like I said earlier, it's just been ingrained in me from an early age. Obviously, coming from an Italian background, you know, football is big in Italy, massive. My grandfather played, my father played, my uncle played. And it's just football 24/7 in the Birrighetti household back in Perth. You know, my poor mum, my poor sister absolutely copped it at a young age because it was just constant football talk. So I had no choice.
Sounds like you couldn't get away from it.
Couldn't get away from it.
Well, AFL's pretty big in WA as well, so what about that?
Yeah, at a young age, there was Auskick back in the day. I don't know if that still exists, Auskick. I gave that a crack, but it was football from day one. It did help me, actually, a bit of Auskick, you know, catching the ball, learning how to catch the ball and taking a mark and jumping as high as you can to take balls and that. Very similar to, obviously, being a goalkeeper, you know similar traits and characteristics. So... But, yeah, no, my AFL wasn't AFL. Look, I love AFL. I still watch it now. I'm a West Coast Eagles member. But, it's just football.
Mate, you've probably got the safest hands on the Central Coast. But, you know, I've seen you carrying Luca around Terrigal from time to time. I'm sure you've dropped him. Have you dropped Sienna yet?
No, I haven't dropped Sienna yet. But, man, my back absolutely hanging on by a thread, carrying Luca. I just want to be in the arms 24/7. And, mate, let me tell you, my back is absolutely gone skis. Like, I need to see a chiropractor, I think, because he's a heavy little bugger. I can tell you that. Just constantly wants to be in the arms. And, you know, he'll be 2 in January, but he's an absolute unit. So, and he loves his daddy and he just wants to be in my arms. But I feel the effects in the morning when I wake up and my wife hears about it as well, complaining about my lower back.
Mate, let's talk about game day or even pre-game day. What sort of rituals, any superstitions that you have, what's going through your head in your preparation for a game?
Yeah, look, obviously the more older you get, the more experience you get. You know, obviously you think about the game during the week in training. You know, you're working on things, you know, to try and perform the best you can on the weekend. You know, there's always video sessions on opposition teams, where their weaknesses are, where their strengths are. But now I'm at an age where I try not to overthink things. You see a lot of problems, you know, especially with young kids, inexperienced players. They play the game in their head 2-3 times before ball's even being kicked. And I can understand, you know, you want to think about the game and you want to have a good game and you want to do everything you can. But over the years and with experience, I just let the game come to me and I just play the game as it is. You know, I don't overthink things. You know, I have a good warm-up before the game. You know, I take in the atmosphere, take in the surroundings, you know, the crowd, what the wind's doing, the lights, little things like that. And then when kickoff happens, game mode, you know, that's when you flick that switch and just play the game, because, you know, you can play the game over and over and over in your head a million times, but in the game it's different. Balls are going to come quicker. You know, the grass is going to be wet. The grass might be dry. So you just try and play the game as it is. Don't overthink things. But, yeah, rituals, pretty chilled. Wake up in the morning, game day, go for a walk with the family down in Terrigal, coffee. Yeah, just chill out. Come back home, spend time with the family, lunch, and just chill. Like, just relax and just focus, stay hydrated, eat well. And then we normally get to the game about an hour and a half, 2 hours before kickoff. Get to the game and then treatment. You know, if you need a massage, you need to see the physio, you need to get strapped, all that kind of stuff. And then, yeah, but no real superstitions, nothing like that.
Don't buy into that at all, eh?
Nah.
You've mentioned also how you're a leader in the team. I know Oli Bozanic is the captain. So what does that mean, you as a leader for the Mariners?
Look, I've played for many clubs. I've been overseas. You know, I've played with some big name players over in Europe, and to see the way they are and the way they lead by example, not only on the field, but off the field as well, it's phenomenal. I'm very happy and thankful that I'm in the leadership group with Oli Bozanic and Matty Simon at the club. Two real leaders, have played at the highest level, have represented their country. But for me, leadership is a big word. It's a massive word. And I think with my experiences, you know, traveling all over the world for football, you see how it is at the top of the top, and the way captains and the leadership group lead by example, you know, it's definitely helped me, you know, in my role at the club. Back in the day, people think, oh, a leader on the field is captain who shouts and he screams, and, you know, but it's not like that. You know, the game's changed. A leader is someone, for me, is someone who looks up to you in the good and the bad. So my job is, obviously, with the Mariners, we have a very young team. You know, we've got one of the youngest teams in the league. So for me, it's important to help these young boys, encourage them and lead them on the right way, because for some of these young kids, it's their first year in professional football. So for me, as a leader, you're not going to get the best out of a young kid if you're smashing him and always constantly on his case, 24/7, screaming and yelling at him. You know, and like I said, over the years, you develop these skills on everyone's different. Everyone wants to be treated differently. You know, I treat Matty Simon differently to how I treat Marco Llorena. I treat Marco Llorena differently how I treat young Jacob Farrell, who's an 18-year-old Central Coast boy. It's his first year. So, you know, Jacob Farrell's one where, you know, there's a way to speak to him and there's a way to communicate to him. You know, you put your arm around him. You know, you teach him, you advise him. Matty Simon, I can scream at him and yell at him, and he'll tell me where to go, and I'll tell him where to go. But then after training, we hug it out. So it's an enjoyable thing. I love it. You know, I love helping young kids. I love seeing them progress, and I want to see them reach the pinnacle. You know, I pass my experiences on to them, what it takes to play at the highest level. You know, full credit to them. They take it on board. They work hard. They listen. And it makes my job easier in the end.
What do you enjoy about that? I guess I could call it mentorship of the young players.
I enjoy it because I see these young kids coming through with, Brendan, so much potential, you know, massive potential. And I've been around players, I've grown up with friends and players who were the next big thing. But for some reason, they get distracted. Their mind focuses on women, focuses on going out and having a good time. Yeah, no problem. You can have women, you can go out and have a good time, but you need to pick and choose when you're doing it. So I've experienced it, you know, with my father and how I was brought up as a young kid. You know, I missed out on all that stuff. I missed out on going to school discos. I missed out on going to school formals. I missed out on going to my mates' parties, because I had to get up early the next morning at 6 o'clock in the morning. My dad would drag me by the ears in the car. Come on, son, we're going to training on a Sunday morning at 5:30, 6 o'clock. You know, so, and I don't want to see their career get wasted and go down the drain. You know, I don't want to see that, because honestly, there's players in our team, young players in our team, that can go to the Premier League, that can represent their country, that can go to the highest level possible. And I don't want to see them. I don't want to see them screw it up by getting misled, you know, heading down the wrong pathway. You know, you're here to do a job, you know, because at the end of the day, your career is short, you know, especially as a field player. You know, you don't have the luxury of playing until you're 40, 41, like a goalkeeper. You know, some players retire 34, 35, 36 maybe. So you need to make the most out of your career. So that's the advice and that's the support and help that I try and give these young kids because they need it. You know, they need it if they want to reach their aspirations and go into the highest level possible.
Yeah, you've given some great examples. And if you could wrap that up, summarize a little bit into what's that difference for you that somebody with potential versus realizing that potential?
Look, you can have as much potential in the world as possible, but potential only gets you so far. You know, I've seen it with my own eyes. You might be the best thing, you know, you might be the best big talent, the next big thing coming through. But someone who is hungry, who works hard, who sacrifices, who might not have the potential that you have, but is willing to sacrifice, work hard, do the right thing, will have a bigger career in the end. And I don't only think that, it's fact. It's fact, 100%. So if that's how I can summarize it, that's probably the best way to summarize it.
Our interview will continue after this. An expression of gratitude or reciprocity, no matter how large or small, is an important part of a healthy culture and relationships. Our friends at Jangler have a great app that allows you to send a gift card with either a personal video, voice message, or funny GIF. You can send it right away or schedule to send on the perfect day and time, so it can be something you set and forget. It's perfect for clients, employees, birthdays, and any celebration where you can't be there in person. It's quick, easy to send, and you can spend instantly in-store or online when you receive a card. Check it out at www.jangler.com.au. That's www.jangler.com.au.
How do you help these young players at the Mariners specifically now again that first game of the season is this weekend? I know you're jumping out of your skin, as all the team would be. How do you help those players leading into the first game and it may be their debut season?
Yeah, look, obviously, it's been a long preseason. You know, we've played a lot of friendly games, but now the real McCoy starts. This is where, you know, it's crunch time. You know, it's do or die. Like you said, for these young kids, this will be their first professional game, A-League game, in a derby against Newcastle rivals in Newcastle, maybe 10, 15,000 people there, round one. It's going to be tough for them, but they're going to have to do it. They're just going to have to go out, forget about the media, forget about social media, everyone talking about the game. Just focus on the game, focus on your job, do what you do, you know, play to your qualities, play to your strengths. And if you're better than your opposition player and you get the best of him, you have every chance of winning the game. That's the advice I can give to these young kids. Don't play the surroundings. Don't worry about the fans. Don't worry about anything. Just when you cross that white line, just be better than your opposition player. And if you're better than your opposition player, and we have 10 players that are better than them, we'll have every chance of winning the game.
You may have already answered this question in a different way, but I want to ask it anyway. What are you loving most about being at a club like the Mariners? Because you have been at a number of clubs, as you said a few times, you've been overseas. What is it that excites you about the Mariners? You've been quoted as saying, I love the coast.
Yeah, look, obviously, you know, like I said before, I've been played for many clubs, been overseas, I've experienced different cultures. But for me, out of every club I've been to in Australia, this club is special. To see, yeah, it's, how can I describe it? The club is a family club, from the players to the office to the fans to everyone involved in the Central Coast. Everyone feels involved in the club, and I just feel like that's so special, you know, and that's what the coast needs, you know. The coast needs, or the players and the club need, the fans and the supporters behind them. You know, you've seen that last year. Every game we won, the crowds were getting bigger. And it was just amazing to see. As a player, you know, there's nothing better than playing in front of 10, 15,000 people. And looking back 5, 6 years, the fans have suffered. you know, even when I was overseas watching games, when I was at other clubs in the A-League watching the Mariners play, you could see the disappointment, the frustration on the fans, on their faces, because they're just so heavily involved in the club. They just want the club to do well. And it was sad. Like I wasn't involved at the club, but it was just, you didn't like to see it, you know, the club suffering in that way. So obviously with the success that we had last season, you know, it's so important this season to build on that, build on what we achieved last year and just go further with it. You know, there's no reason why we can't make the grand final and win it. You know, but going back to the club, it's a special club. You know, it's a family club. It's the best dressing room that I've been a part of. You know, I've been in dressing rooms overseas, you know, with some big, big players. And this dressing room here is just, there's something special. And I love the coast. My family loves it here. You know, everyone's so friendly. Everyone's so welcoming. You know, I go down to Terrigal. I go to the shops. You know, people come and speak to me. Hey, Hawaii. I just love that. You know, I love interacting with different people, meeting new people. And, you know, it's a special place. And like I said, mate, the family is loving life here.
So good to hear, mate. And thanks for explaining that. So much of that resonates. I personally think I agree. The Mariners had lost some of that feeling as a community club, but it does feel good. I mean, seeing guys like you down in Terrigal and Ollie and talking to people and getting to know, you know, not being sort of standoffish about it. Like, people will love that. That's what brings people to the game. They know the players. They want to support the players. And I just feel that that had been missing for a period of time. How much has someone like Monty contributed to that atmosphere as the new gaffer?
Yeah, massive. Obviously, no one knows the coast better than what Monty does. You know, he's been here for what? I'd say close to 8-9 years. And first of all, I'm buzzing that he's got the job. It deserves a crack. He's a cracking guy, good coach. And I just hope, you know, we have...
You're doing great at sucking up to him this weekend, mate.
No. He's a top guy. Honestly, you know, there's not many nice guys in football, but he's a good bloke. And I just hope we have a successful year and give him what he deserves, because he's a top guy, cracking guy, and I just want him to have so much success. You know, he deserves it. But like I said, he knows the coast better than anyone else. It's weird because he's like a player. Like, he's the coach, but he's like a player. He's like one of the boys, and you still see him out and about, and he's drummed that into us, you know, the community, the fans. Like, it's an integral part of this club, you know, and it's so important that we keep that. You know, doing little things like promotions, you know, going out to schools, going out to football clubs, giving back to grassroots, you know, it's massive. You know, if you want fans to come to the game, you know, these are the little things that you have to do. And it's so important to a football club to have, you know, the supporters and the fans, you know. And like you said, I love it. I love going down to Terrigal. You know, I meet people, you know, they come up to me. I've never met them before. And I'm there like you. I didn't know you from a bar of soap. You come and introduce yourself, and every morning, you know, we speak, we chat. Like, I just love it. You know, it's fantastic. And I was in that position when I was a young kid. You know, I've seen it with my own eyes. You know, I used to go to the Perth Glory games back in the day with my old man, you know, and I used to see players, you know, idols and players that I looked up to. You know, you go after a game and you want to have a photo with them and they say no, or they just turn their back on you, and it's not good. Like, it's not nice. You know, I've seen it with my own eyes, and I was hurt. Like, I was hurt as a young kid. You know, saying that someone that I looked up to can't even have a photo, like, you know, it's not on. You know, what does 5 seconds of your life cost to, like, a young fan? You know, these young kids, they look up to you, and you're a role model. Not only what you do on the field, but what you do off the field as well is as important, and how you conduct yourself and how you treat people with respect and dignity. You know, it's crucial. It's not what you do only on the field. It's how you are off the field as well, and it's just as important.
Yeah, once again, mate, well said. You're certainly a fine gentleman off the field. Maybe you're not as much of a gentleman on the field. What's this thing with goalkeepers? They sort of, you know, grab the ball on their line, they run out to the edge of the 18-yard box screaming and shouting. Is that something they teach you at goalkeeper training or what?
Just pure emotion, mate. Pure emotion. You know, when someone's not doing their job properly. As a goalkeeper, communication is so important. It makes your job so much easier as a goalkeeper, trust me, communicating to your defenders. And if you don't communicate, I don't communicate because I'm on them for the whole 90 minutes, but, you know, I'm coaching them. And if they make a mistake, not a mistake, but if I tell them to do something and they don't, or they I tell them to go and block a shot and they don't block a shot and then they shoot, you know, I'll go out and I'll let them know. You know, it's not having a go at them. You know, it's just trying to make them a better player and trying to make my job a lot easier. You know, because the worst thing is going into a game making 10, 15 saves. I don't want to do that. You know, I want to go into a game making 2 saves, 3 saves. You know, gone are the days of goalkeepers making 15 saves a game. You know, and that's where communication skills over the years have really helped me. You know, and I underestimated that back in the day. You know, oh, you don't need to talk. But as you grow up, experience, communication is so important. And yeah, if you see me go off my chops in a game, you know why. The defender has either done something wrong or he's not listening to me. So it's good. Keeps them on their toes. They need it sometimes.
Mate, I've watched a few scenarios on YouTube and you've got a pretty wicked death stare, I have to say. I'm not sure I want to be on the other end of that.
Yeah, I don't know. It's maybe, yeah, I've seen the videos on YouTube, mate. I don't think it's screaming at the players. I think it's more screaming at the referees, giving the referees a mouthful.
Now, that's something you're not allowed to do, is it?
Yeah, but you have to sometimes. You got to keep them on their toes.
Goalkeepers know better, right?
Yeah, we do.
This goalkeeper position, mate, and the communication that's happening on the field and continual communication to the players, you're seeing things from the back that, you know, other players aren't seeing from their position. How important is that on the pitch, but also particularly when you go into the, you know, into halftime? You know, how much do you talk at halftime and share what you're seeing?
You know, during 90 minutes, you have the whole picture of the field, your last line of defense. You can see where things are breaking down, where other teams are hurting us. You know, you can see all these things. But it's hard for me because I can't shout to the strikers who are 60, 70 metres away. You know, I can only really control the back four, the defenders and maybe the midfielders if I'm lucky. You know, so for me, during the game, it's just getting everyone organised, getting the back four organised. But these days, it's made so much easier, obviously, with technology. We have videos, you know, we have the assistant coach, we have the goalkeeper on the bench who can see things that the gaffer might not see. So at the halftime break, I'll pick up on things and I'll let them know what I can see and what we're doing good, what we're doing bad, what we need, what we don't need. But Monty's smart enough, like he's played the game, he knows the game inside out. But so we come in at halftime and we'll have video, we'll have a projector, few points. He doesn't want to brainwash us. He doesn't want to give us too much information. You know, I'll pass what I think and what I know onto the coaches and onto the players. But at the end of the day, it's the coaching staff that do all that kind of stuff. My role is more so on the field, you know, because I can see, you know, everything from behind. And, yeah, it's just getting players into positions and you know, making sure they stick to the game plan and stick to the structure and, you know, what we set out before the game, which what we thought will work and which will win us the game in the end. So, yeah, halftime is pretty easy.
Sit back and enjoy the oranges. Sit back
and enjoy, yeah, some lollies.
I know when we spoke either this morning or yesterday morning and you were in Mudgee the weekend playing Blacktown, I think it was, and you guys got up, but it was a bit cold, a bit wet. As a goalkeeper, you didn't have a lot to do. How do you maintain a level of concentration? Because it's only that it's in this position where you only got to make one mistake, level of concentration in those quieter games.
Yeah, look, obviously, look, no matter where you go, you're going to face different conditions. It's going to rain. It's going to be windy. It's going to be 40 degrees in Perth when we go and play in Perth in the summer on a Sunday afternoon. But it's an excuse. You know, I try not to make excuses. You have to, at the end of the day, you have to play. So for a goalkeeper, it's so important that, like you said, you might not do anything for 60 minutes. You might not do anything for 70 minutes, 80 minutes, 90 minutes. But you're 1-0 up. You know, you have to make a crucial save in the 91st minute in extra time to win your team the game. And if you don't make that save, you know, that's the difference of winning the game, 3 points, or drawing the game, 1 point, which come the end of the season, you look back and you're like, oh, geez, that extra 3 points would have got us in the top three. But no, now we're seventh or sixth, you know. So it's so important to, no matter what, you just have to stay switched on at all times. You know, you just have to play the game, stay focused, stay on your toes, be ready, because you can be called upon at any time. You know, that's our position and you need to be there when the team needs you. And like you said, you might not touch the ball the whole game, but you have to make that crucial save at the end of the game So it's just staying mentally alert, mentally being aware. Like you can't switch off for one second. Not in our position. You can't afford to, because yeah, it can cost you. Maybe not cost you, you know, in the coming weeks, but at the end of the season, you look back and you're like, oh, geez, that 3 points, you know, would have been the difference of making finals or not making finals. So just another little bit of pressure.
You guys love that. What is it about the pressure you love?
Just thrive off it. We just thrive off it. Yeah, it's just some people think, like, how do you thrive off pressure? Like, you're nuts. But just enjoy it. Like, I just love being the best. And obviously, I don't go into games thinking that I'm going to make a mistake. I'm going into games thinking with that mentality that I'm the best. I'm the best goalkeeper in Australia. And I'm going to prove to everyone and show everyone why I'm the best goalkeeper in the country. You know, that's the mindset you have to have as a goalkeeper. You know, it might sound arrogant, but in my position, you need to have that arrogance. Otherwise, you're not going to survive.
Let's unpack that a bit, because you've talked about how much you love the Coast and the Mariners, and it's, you know, fantastic club to play for. But, you know, you want to be the best. You're in professional sport. It's only right that you want to keep improving and keep playing in higher leagues. What are your aspirations for playing overseas again?
Look, obviously, you know, I've had a taste of what it is to play abroad and, you know, in the highest leagues in Europe. As a young kid, you know, you dreamed of playing in the Premier League, and I spent 2 years in the Prem with Swansea. And, you know, I never thought I'd get there, but I got there, all the hard work, all the sacrifices, you know, like maybe when I was a young kid, I didn't have all the potential like other kids had, but I sacrificed everything to get to the top. And all that hard work and all that sacrifice paid off in the end. You know, some idiots back in Perth, oh, you know, he's lucky. No, it's not luck. You know, it's going back to those days where, you know, Sunday morning, 5:30 in the morning, running laps of Perry Lake Stadium back in, which is an athletics track in Perth. You know, 5:30 in the morning, I was 16 at the time, running up and down the stairs around the whole stadium, vomiting, my dad telling me to get up, go again. Now, that's not luck. Some players are lucky. You know, don't get me wrong, there's some players that are extremely lucky and have made it to the top, but only a very small amount of players can achieve that. Look, aspirations, I want to go back overseas, definitely. You know, I'm 30. You know, I have probably another 10, 11 years left on my playing career. And I want to make the most of it. I want to experience different parts of the world. You know, I'd love to go to the Middle East. I'd love to go and play in Asia and just experience a new culture, a different style of football. Because I enjoy it. I enjoy what I do. I enjoy going to different parts of the world and, you know, experiencing different styles and different philosophies of football. I experienced a philosophy in the UK. I experienced a philosophy when I was in Italy. Experienced a different philosophy when I was in Holland. You know, Australia is different. You know, in Holland, you know, football is very technical. You know, here in Australia, it's technical, but you need to be more physically fit. You know, you're in different conditions. You know, you're playing in the summer. You know, over in Europe, you're playing in the winter. You know, it's all these different things. And, you know, I want to experience that. You know, so for me, next step would probably be, you know, Middle East or somewhere in Asia would be ideal. Not to say, you know, Europe as well. I'd definitely go back to Europe in a heartbeat. I love Europe. You know, Europe's fantastic. You know, my wife's family's over in Wales. So to be closer to them, you know, she's been away from the family now for 4 years. So if I can find a good club closer, you know, in Europe, closer to Wales, you know, it'd be ideal as well. So, look, I don't want to think too far ahead. You know, I have a big season ahead of me. You know, I had a great season last year, but that's forgotten about. Now I have to really kick on and build on from last year and smash it again this year.
Have you got a favourite memory from playing overseas, mate?
So if you say to me, Mark, what's your best memory playing when you're on the field? I'd say when I was in Holland, because I was at a small club in Holland, very small club, and we played against Feyenoord, which is one of the biggest clubs in Holland, and the club has never beaten Feyenoord in the club's history. So we played them down in Rotterdam in front of 65,000 people. Nuts. I was bricking it before the game. I was so nervous. I ended up getting man of the match and we beat them 2-0 in Rotterdam. First time in the club's history that it's ever been done. So that was probably, as a player, like being involved in the game was probably my highlight. But then being at a club and not playing, I'd have to say my time in Swansea, travelling with the team, going to all the different stadiums, you know, warming up on Anfield, warming up at Old Trafford, you know, warming up at Wembley, you know, it was just nuts. And, you know, walking in the tunnel, you're touching shoulders with, you know, the likes of Vardy, Pogba, Wayne Rooney, you know, the list goes on. So that was next level as well.
Mate, just going back to Holland and Feyenoord, aren't their fans crazy as well? They're one of the craziest fans in Europe, aren't they?
How did you get out of there alive? Communicating like on the field. Honestly, I couldn't even hear myself think. You know, it was just like, it was nuts, Brendan. Honestly, it was out of this world. You know, like at a corner, like when we were defending a corner, I was speaking to one of my players who was like not even a meter away from me and he couldn't hear what I was saying. Like it was just, yeah, nuts. And the way the stadiums are over there, it's not like, so like the grandstands are like, they're on top of you basically. Like they just go up. Like a lot of the stadiums go like back. The stands are just up. So they're like just all on top of you. And like honestly, you can't even hear yourself think. Like it was just nuts. But we got the job done, which was good.
How do you adapt in that sort of, you know, again, talked about communication so important as a goalkeeper. What do you have to do to adapt when you're in those sort of situations?
It's just hand signals. You know, when you have a stop in play, quickly run to your central defender, pass on a bit of information to him, you know, at a stoppage of play, because you can't, like, during the game, it's impossible. You can't even hear the coach. Like, the coach is screaming instructions and the players can't even hear him. So you're just waiting for like breaks in play, someone to go down with an injury, you know, a stoppage where we can get together on the field and talk things through what we need to do and what we need to do better. So, yeah, nuts. Great experience, so good experience.
I'm going to flip that around to maybe the real tough experiences. I know you spoke earlier around a couple of injuries and both pretty serious, but one maybe more serious than the other. What's been the toughest moment for you in this professional football career?
Look, as a player, probably my time in Holland was probably the most difficult time of my career. Over in Holland, it was... So I went to a club. So I left Swansea, who were in the Prem at the time. I went to NAC, which was a club in Holland that I joined. They had a lot of problems with the goalkeepers in the past. You know, they got rid of a lot of goalkeepers. There was just this... The club had a problem with goalkeepers. So anyway, I rocked up at the club. Big hopes, come from the Premier League, come from Swansea. And we had a real young team. Like we had one of the youngest teams in the league. Like we had like 17, 18, 19-year-olds in the team. So for the first 5-6 months, the fans absolutely loved me. You know, the team was on a roll. We were flying. We were mid-table. But for a club like NAC, that's massive. Because normally they're fighting relegation. They're in a relegation battle every year. Then a bit of bad, like a few bad games started happening. I was making some mistakes. And the way they see it there is they love their Dutch players. They're like, why are we bringing in a foreign goalkeeper when there's someone in our own backyard that can do as good as a job as what Birigidi's doing? But like I said, the first 6 months, I couldn't do anything wrong. Started losing a few games, made a couple of mistakes. Media were getting a hold of it. Social media was getting a hold of it. I was getting slaughtered on social media. I'd walk down the streets in the city that I was living. I was copping it. But the club, fair play to the club, they stuck by me. They stuck by me. They played me. But honestly, it affected me. Like my head was, my mental state was probably the lowest it's ever been as a footballer. You know, and I was going into games scared, home games. Like I would get a ball back from like one of my own players and I was getting whistled at. I was getting booed at from our own fans' mind. And I didn't know how to cope with that. Like, I didn't know how to deal with it because it was the first time in my football, in my career, that I've experienced this kind of situation. And I was going into games, not myself. I was going into games scared. I didn't want the ball. Like, if the defender would turn and play, I'm like, no, just kick it away. Like, I didn't want it. But I didn't, like I said, I didn't know how to cope. I didn't know how, because I've never been in that situation before.
What did you do?
Like I said, had that close group, had family, had my agent, had Carly at the time. So just don't worry about it. Don't let these imbeciles affect you. Just get off social media. You know, all these keyboard warriors think how, you know, they can smash you over a keyboard, but when they're face to face, you know, they're all lovey-dovey. Just don't let it affect you. Just forget about it. Get off social media. Go to training. Work hard. Just do your stuff. Be professional. And don't let the other shit affect what you do on the field. And then, yeah, that was basically it, really. And then the season finished, new coach came in, signed another goalkeeper. He didn't want me. And I was back in Australia and signed for Melbourne City. Yeah, it was pretty nuts, you know, experiencing that. You know, it was tough. You know, I didn't even want to leave my apartment. Like, it was just tight. Like, it was brutal. But that's what it's like over there, Brendan. You know, it's do or die over there. You know, here in Australia, we're so lucky. You know, we don't have a relegation system here. You come last in the A-League and it means nothing. You go on holidays earlier than the other teams. You know, in Holland, you come last or you're in a relegation battle, mate, the club's losing millions. You know, you can't leave your house. You know, fans are at your training ground. You know, they want to kill you. Like, it's just a whole different, like, yeah, it's just next level over there, next level.
Having that experience, mate, and the fact that, you know, you have a drive to play overseas and take an opportunity again, what would you do differently? How would you handle those situations? Because they'll happen.
Of course.
You know, you're a goalkeeper, you'll make a mistake. Yeah. That's life.
Flick that switch, mate. Flick that switch, make a mistake, get on to the next action. Don't worry about the surroundings. Don't worry about the fans. Don't just zone all that out and just do your job. Just do your job. You make a mistake. Don't get on social media. Don't read the bad stuff. Don't even read the positive stuff, because that can even get to your head and you think, oh, you're better than what you are. Just stay humble, stay grounded, and that's the experience that, you know, I'll take if I do get that opportunity to go abroad again.
What do you like to do to stay grounded, mate? Again, professional football, professional sportsman, you know, some would say they haven't been involved in that sort of environment. It's a different environment. Is it the real world? Maybe, maybe not. But what keeps you humble?
Look, it's been grounded into me from a young age. You know, I come from a family that didn't have the luxuries of what other families have. You know, my father, my mother have always had to work hard for their money. You know, they sacrificed a lot for me to have a career. You know, whether that was leaving work early to come home, to take me to training. You know, they've always been there for me. You know, my parents have been phenomenal, you know, in my career. And I have that mentality of, you know, staying humbled. No matter what you've done, no matter what you achieve, stay grounded. You know, you see some players, you know, that have made squillions, millions of dollars, but are absolute jerks. And it tarnishes their reputations. Like, it's just, it's not nice to see. You know, I'm lucky enough, I went overseas, I made good money, you know, but I'm not one to show my money. You know, I'm not one to drive flashy cars. You know, I like nice things. I reward myself, don't get me wrong. You know, I reward my wife, you know, for putting up with me for 4 years.
We're all in that boat, mate.
But just to stay grounded, mate, like, you know, spend your money wisely, do the right things with your money, spend your money on things that are going to make you money, you know, because you see it, like you see it in our day and age, you know, players making millions and have got nothing to their name anymore. You know, it's sad to see, but I'm lucky, like I have my wife. You know, I have my family, you know, my family back in Perth, that close-knit group that really helped me as well. You know, staying humbled, staying so important, so, so, so important. You know, because the last thing you want is to have that reputation of he's a jerk. Yeah, he can have all the money in the world that he wants, but he's an absolute jerk. You know, it's not nice. It's not nice to have that next to your name.
All of the players you've played with over time, if you think about them, and there may be some that you felt are more team players than others, what sort of attributes do you see in those sort of team players, your experience?
Now, I've played with players overseas that have played in World Cups, that have done everything they have in, like, everything you dream of as a young kid, they've done, whether that's win a World Cup, whether that's playing in a Champions League, you know, whether that's playing at a European Cup. Give you a great example. Very, very good friend of mine, Fernando Llorente, Spanish international, played for Spain, won a World Cup with Spain, won a European Cup with Spain. He's done everything. The guy's worth over 100 million. Anyway, I was lucky enough to play with him in Swansea. And this guy, honestly, is like my brother. You know, from day one, I met him, not like a brother, he's obviously a lot older, but he treated me like his son. You know, to see that, to see someone with that much money, but the way he treated me and looked after me, the way he did, unbelievable, amazing. He'd do anything for me. And it was just so good to see, you know, someone that's done everything in the game, helping a 23-year-old kid out from Perth. Never met him before, just an absolute gentleman and someone that I admire and someone that I definitely look up to. True gentleman. They're the best ones. You know, those are the players that you look up to and you're like, wow, how can you just be so – forget about football. Forget about the achievements. Forget about what you've done as a footballer. But how can you just be so perfect as a human being is just beautiful, like, amazing to see. amazing to see. I still speak to him once a week. Like, he calls me. Where is he in Spain? Calls me up. How's the family? How's the little ones doing? Like, just so good. Like, he doesn't have to do that. He's done everything in the game. You know, it's just amazing to have those people, you know, by your side. It's just amazing.
What sort of legacy do you want to leave for other players when they think of Mark Birraghidi? What do you want him to say?
That he's a winner, that he's an honest person, he's a helpful person, humbled. You know, I want to guide these young kids. You know, I want to set a good example for these young kids coming through. You know, obviously there's going to come a day where I'm going to hang those gloves up and I'll be on the couch with a glass of red wine watching these young kids coming through, and I want to see them. You know, what I've taught them over the years, what I've coached them, I want to see them. I want them to take the reins and take charge. Be a leader. Be a good role model on the field, off the field. Conduct yourself in the right way. You know, that's the legacy that I want to leave.
Mate, you mentioned one player, Lorenzo, and is there anybody else who you would think of that doesn't have to be a player, but who's had that major impact in your own career and leadership journey? If you could choose one person.
Look, obviously my family have, my dad and my mum, big influence in my career, massive, massive influence in my career from a young age. But my wife has definitely taken the reins. Look, very successful woman back in the UK, had her own business, successful business. I met her when I was there and she's been with me since. She didn't have to. She was making good money back in the UK, close to her family, close to her friends. But she wanted to give that up to support me and help me have a career. You know, not many women do that. You know, not many women sell their business, give up everything to travel the other side of the world to support their loved one. You know, it's, yeah, amazing. You know, amazing. And I can't thank her enough. And, you know, we're so lucky now, you know, married, two beautiful kids. It's just perfect. And, you know, we speak about it every night, how lucky we are. And, you know, I speak to her and I'm like, oh, you know, do you miss your business now? Look what we've got now, two beautiful kids, two perfect kids. You know, so I can't thank her enough. What she's done and what she's sacrificed is, you know, has helped me a lot. You know, it just gives me that peace of mind as a footballer going into games, not having to have to worry about her. Obviously, she misses family. You know, it's normal. She hasn't seen her family for 4 years. But, you know, at least I get that peace of mind going into games that she's happy and two beautiful kids, and so important. So I can't thank her enough. You know, she's fantastic at what she does, and to put up with me as well. You know, coming home from training, grumpy and angry, and you know, fair play to her. She's done well.
Carly sounds like a special woman, mate. So I won't ask her because she's not there. But how about you tell me what's these Mark Birraghidi bad habits? What gets on Carly's goat? You got to think about it. She'd rattle off 10 straight away, I'm sure. My wife hated when I didn't do that. I did night feeds on Saturday night. That'd be it, because you play football on work on Monday.
Away games, she hates when I go away because she's stuck at home. What else? That's about it, really. And she hates the schedule changes, when the schedule changes with training and that, because she can't book any. She can't book to go and get her nails and her hair and her eyebrows and lashes done. Oh, probably that's number one, actually, the schedule change. She absolutely cooks it.
I'm with Carly. These schedule changes are bloody annoying. Oh, it's life, mate. It's life. Who's the most annoying teammate? The Mariners. Spill some dirt.
It's a tricky one, actually. It's hard because we've got a lot of new players in the club this year. So I'm still trying to get to know, like, each individual. But annoying, I'd probably have to say Lewis Miller, young kid. You know, he's 22, I think he is. 22, but he thinks he's done everything in football already. He's one of those ones. And rates himself a bit. You know, so I'm on his case a lot. You know, I need to bring him back down to earth, humble him.
Humble him.
Yeah, just, you know, bit of a pretty boy as well. So he can get on my nerves a little bit as well.
He's not one of these young fellas that gets facials and manicures and stuff like that, is he?
Not a fan. I need to change him. I need to educate him a bit.
A little bit more mentorship from Birraghidi, I think.
Out the other. And then when he doesn't listen, I lose my temper at him, and then it's not good. Not good for the dressing room. But it's good. We're getting there slowly.
Good man. You're having an influence.
For the good. Yeah.
For the good? Good man, mate. Good man. So, Beerers, it's first game this weekend, as we mentioned, first game season proper. What's your prediction, mate? Because this episode's going to come out probably 3 weeks after the first round. Tell us your prediction and we'll check if it was right or not.
2-0, Newcastle. Oh, Newcastle, Central Coast, sorry. Cut that.
2-0 Newcastle. It sounds like you're a shocker.
Central Coast. No, it was weird because I just actually got a reminder on my calendar that just popped up here saying that Sunday, Newcastle. And I was looking at Newcastle and I actually just read Newcastle, but nah.
You got a reminder pop up that you got a game on Sunday? Awesome, mate. Awesome. Well, look, good luck for that game. And prediction for the season? Finished third Mariners last season. So how are we going for this season?
What, you want a position or you want a rough estimate?
Give us a position, mate. We'll obviously hold you to that at the end of the season.
Fifth.
Finals football. How are we going to go in finals?
Finals football. And then we're going to give it a real crack in the finals, win the grand final, celebrating Gosford.
Mate, I sincerely hope that happens unless the Mariners are playing the Roar in the grand final. If that's the case, then I may have to go back to my roots in Brisbane and go for the Roar, buddy. I'm sorry.
They're good. Good club. I love playing in Brisbane.
They are. Yeah, it's a good ground, isn't it? Great place. But no, Mariners are certainly, you know, certainly got a massive soft spot for the Mariners. And for the good of the community and the good of the Central Coast, it's really important that we've got a strong Central Coast Mariners club. People like you at the club certainly make it stronger. A number of the other boys who you've referred to today, mate, there does feel like a good feel around the community and the Mariners getting in touch again with the community. So, mate, and you doing this interview with us today and, you know, changing your schedule, really appreciate that. Shows how much you are committed to the community and getting some message out there and sharing your psyche and your insight about being a goalkeeper, mate. My assessment at the end of this interview is that goalkeepers aren't actually that bad.
We're good blokes off the field.
What does Matty Simon think about goalkeepers?
Lucky I'm on his team, to be honest with you, because I hated playing against him.
Oh, yeah. He's a menace.
I used to hate playing against him. So I'm glad he's on my team now. But no, I've got a good relationship with Simo. He's one of my good mates and a lot of respect for him and what he's done. And it's nice that we're in the same team and, you know, being an older head, Central Coast boy, you know, it's good to see. And he's a good guy, good family, good person to have at the club. And you know, so important to have players like him, you know, represent the coast, you know, it's fantastic. Along with Ollie Bozanic as well.
Yeah, who's a coast boy as well, isn't he?
He is.
Yeah, having those guys back and roots on the Central Coast, again, really supports that community club feel. So, mate, thanks again for your time. It's been a pleasure having a chat with you. Thanks for being so open with us and sharing your life as a goalkeeper, buddy.
Thank you for having me on the program. Absolutely loved it.
Been an absolute pleasure, buddy. Goalkeepers aren't that bad. That's my assessment after chatting with Beerers. Not only that, he was articulate, thoughtful, and very open to sharing his experiences and insight into the mindset of a goalkeeper. What a mindset he has for leadership. He's also a decent fortune teller. During our interview, Beerers predicted a 2-0 win to the Mariners over Newcastle in the derby match. He was pretty close. The Mariners got up 2-1. If only he'd kept that coveted clean sheet, his prediction would have held up. Let's hope his prediction of Mariners playing finals football comes true. One thing's for sure, Beerers having another great season and providing leadership from the back will give the team confidence and go a long way to the young Mariners having another great season. By the way, Beerers is also a Liverpool FC supporter, so there's no doubt he's a top bloke. These were my three key takeaways from my conversation with Beerers. My first key takeaway, leaders have a team-first mentality. In Beerers' case, putting team first means physically putting his body on the line. As a professional footballer and goalkeeper, he doesn't think twice about doing it. He shared his story of a serious facial injury being ruled out for 16 weeks and back playing again within 4 weeks. Why? Because his team needed him. This is definitely a leader with a team-first mentality. My second key takeaway, leaders help people reach their full potential. They're passionate about lifting others up and helping them succeed. For Beerers, this involves spending time with the young players, getting to know them, understanding them, mentoring them, treating them as individuals, helping them realize their potential and learning to maximize it. Leaders are passionate about helping others reach their full potential. My third key takeaway, leaders live for self-improvement. Whether it's a keeping a clean sheet, saving penalties, or striving to play in a higher league, they're always pushing themselves to be better. They know that driving their own self-improvement sets a foundation for their teammates to seek improvement. Leaders set the standard, lead by example, and live for self-improvement. So in summary, my three key takeaways were: leaders have a team-first mentality. Leaders help people reach their full potential. And leaders live for self-improvement. If you want to talk culture, leadership, or teamwork, or have any questions or feedback about the episode, you can leave me a comment on the socials, or you can leave me a voice message at theculturofthings.com. Thanks for joining me. And remember, the best outcome is on the other side of a genuine conversation. Thank you for listening to the Culture of Things podcast with Brendan Rodgers. Please visit brendanrodgers.com.au to access the show notes. If you love the Culture of Things podcast, please subscribe, rate, and give a review on Apple Podcasts. And remember, a healthy culture is your competitive advantage.